I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and this is Marketplace Weekend. Over the past two shows, we've examined several potential policies under President-elect Donald Trump. And we'll keep doing that as we learn more about them. But now we're going to turn to his businesses. And to be clear, we don't actually know how extensive they are because he has not released his tax returns. But we do know that there are many potential conflicts of interest between his businesses and role as president. Trump has said he will put his interests in a blind trust, but then that his children will oversee his businesses, making them not a blind trust. Since the election, he named his three oldest ones to his transition team, met with developers from a project in India, and his daughter Ivanka accompanied him to a meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. So, what does the law say about how Trump should handle his businesses? Ken Gross leads the political law practice at the firm Skadden. And when you talk about how business and politics intersect, he's the guy. Ken, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Is there like a standard operating procedure for someone assuming the presidency, particularly when they are wealthy and have sort of vast financial holdings?
Well, I don't know if there's a standard operating procedure for this because this situation is unprecedented. But any president coming into office develops a code of ethics and immediately turns his attention to, or at least the staff turns his attention to, any ethical issues. In this case, of course, the challenges are unprecedented. First of all, we've never had a president come from the private sector as a businessman directly, who's never been in the government. He filed paperwork with the Federal Election Commission, Donald Trump, showing ownership in over 500 businesses. And we don't really even know what these businesses are. You know, when we've had wealthy people go into office like Mike Bloomberg, we knew what Bloomberg business was. But these businesses are something like DJT Mark IV or DJT Qatar or Shanghai or whatever. You know, we know the value in range, but we don't really have a complete picture of what these holdings are and what conflicts of interest might arise.
Well, you're a lawyer. I mean, the legal rules around this seem kind of fuzzy. Like, do we have to?
There are a couple of laws that come into play, but the main law that confronts an individual when he or she enters the executive branch of the federal government, whether they're the Secretary of Energy or the Secretary of Treasury or on down, has to comply with strict conflict of interest laws administered by the Office of Government Ethics. Hmm. However, as your question suggests, the president and the vice president is exempt from those laws because his position and his responsibilities are so broad that it would be very difficult to say, okay, you have to sell this or have to sell that. You know, when a secretary of treasury comes in, you can't own stock in a financial services firm. If you're an energy secretary, you can't own stock in an oil company. But when it comes to the president, it's not possible to really do that in a practical way. So they just exempted the president. So the Office of Government Ethics rules do not apply to Donald Trump.
Wow.
Yeah. There are some laws out there. Of course, you know, you can't trade for profit on confidential information. There are bribery laws, honest services fraud laws that all apply, but there's one that's really interesting, and that is the Emoluments Clause of the U.S. Constitution. It's actually was in there from the very beginning. It's in the Constitution from 1787, and it's written in a very flowery way about nobility and princes not conferring emoluments or presents or benefits on the president of the United States or anybody. So if his companies are dealing with a corporation that is essentially an arm of a federal government, and that company confers a benefit on him or even possibly just compensation on a business, it could be considered an emolument and would be in violation of that constitutional provision. There is an out clause, however, and the out clause is Congress can consent to it. So the Congress can essentially give him a waiver.
Wow. There's been a lot of talk of placing his assets in a blind trust. But then he turned around and said, well, my kids will oversee the business, which makes it not a blind trust. What do we know about kind of who will run his business assets now?
Well, he says his kids are going to run it. And, you know, he can call it a blind trust, but it isn't a blind trust. The history is that President Carter, President Reagan, President H.W. Bush, President Clinton, President George W. Bush all put their assets in blind trusts that were administered by an independent trustee, which is how the law reads, the Office of Government Ethics laws read.
And we should note that President Obama did not do that in part because his assets were not that significant at the time. They were in treasury bills and in index funds.
That's correct. He didn't need to do it because he put his money into a highly diversified funds, index funds or government treasuries, that kind of thing, which actually is a great way to go if your holdings are conducive to it. And we handled a good bit of Mayor Bloomberg's assets in that fashion when I represented him. And he has wealth far greater than President-elect Trump. The problem is in Trump's situation, he cannot liquidate his holdings. Many of them are illiquid. They're in the form of golf courses and hotels and a 23% interest in something we don't even know. To disentangle that and liquidate it into something that would be susceptible to a blind trust would take more than 4 years, probably.
Well, so let's say you can't untangle these things. What are the consequences of that?
Well, under the domestic conflict of interest laws, there is no penalty because he is exempt from those laws. I think it will be a constant thorn in his side because people will be making accusations. I mean, he's the president of the United States. The last thing he wants to do is to appear that he's acting unethically, meaning he doesn't want to appear to be acting in his personal financial self-interest in derogation of the public's interest. What he will have to do, first of all, I think, is look at his international holdings, because that's where this emoluments clause comes into play, number one. And number two, I think those are the most sensitive issues, particularly dealing with countries that are essentially enemies, whether it's Russia or China, or at least not friendly countries, or those like Turkey, Azerbaijan, where relationships are sometimes difficult. And if he can disentangle from those holdings, liquidate them, or if it's a debt situation, as was explained regarding the Bank of China, transfer those debts to another institution, work on that first. After that, take a look at his domestic holdings. Are there ones in particular that are going to cause problems? This hotel here in Washington, D.C., which I think he loves and is the centerpiece of his holdings in some regards, is leasing its property from the federal government. In that situation, I think they're going to have to go to great lengths to make sure that whatever government official at the Government Services Administration is administering that property as the landlord on that property is going to have to, you know, sort of be in a bubble, if you will, and they'll make sure there's no political or other pressure put on him and that he deals with this situation in an arm's length situation. There's no one size fits all, but they're going to have to address it to abate the possibility of constant scrutiny and criticism.
Ken Gross from Skadden Arps, thank you so much.
My pleasure.